Hello, and welcome to There's Hope with Homeopathy. This monthly show airs the third Friday of each month and focuses on classical homeopathic treatment, how it can benefit your entire family, and especially how it can be a curative therapy in the treatment of autism. My name is Amy Lansky, and I'm recording today from Portola Valley, California, in the San Francisco Bay Area. And today's show will air on March 21st, 2008. Well, hi, everybody. It's March. Actually, when I'm recording this, it's February 29th. But for all of you listening there, it's at least March 2008. It's hard to believe it's already March. Time goes by so fast. Anyway, let's talk a little bit about current events like I always do. And the first thing I want to tell you about today is a new website that you should all go visit, and it's called homeopathyworkedforme.org. You know, I don't know if many of you know about this, but in the past year or so, there's been a worldwide assault on homeopathy, especially in the English-speaking countries. It all began really in England, where homeopathy has always been very accepted, in fact, used by the royal family. And there's been a lot of assaults in the media on homeopathy and efforts to remove coverage of homeopathy by the National Health Service there. All of this has been also accompanied in the past year or so by an attack on the Wikipedia page about homeopathy that I've been alerted to for a while. So, first of all, if any of you go to the Wikipedia page to find out about homeopathy, don't believe a word you read there, or very little of it. It has been taken over by an organization of quackbusters, these people who try to get rid of all forms of alternative medicine, not just homeopathy. And I've recently been alerted to the fact that that this has really been not just a bunch of random people going to the Wikipedia page or doing these things, but it's sort of a concerted effort being orchestrated by a media organization in New York City that is funded by, I don't know, but apparently by well-funded, and led by really just a few people in various countries. I personally experienced one of these people as apparently the head quackbuster person in Australia, who sent me a message several years ago, a really scary message, threatening me. It was very threatening to me. I felt it was threatening, accusing me of exploiting my child to make money off my book, which, by the way, is so ridiculous, I can't even believe it. I've hardly made any money, really, on my book. You don't make much money selling a book, unless you're the author of the Harry Potter series or something. But anyway, and accusing me of being a terrible person because I'm encouraging people to think about vaccination and people will die because of me. It was just this horrible email that scared me. And this guy, I found out just recently, is really the lead quackbuster guy in Australia. And I've personally experienced sort of what this organization can do to someone. If you type in Amy Lansky into Google, this guy's rant against me will appear on the first page of hits. And I think it speaks for itself. I don't mind it anymore because I realize when somebody reads that, they can see how hateful and how deranged this person is. But anyway, those people have taken over Wikipedia. I know people who work within the Wikipedia organization, and there's really not much they can do about this since it is an open forum. And anybody who has any connection to official homeopathy is unable to contribute to the page and fix it up. So basically, the page has been taken over, and this is happening to, for example, the pages on chiropractic and other alternative medicines. So these people have orchestrated this worldwide campaign to berate homeopathy. So this is why I told you, anyway, to go to this page called homeopathyworkedforme.org. It's an effort by homeopaths and homeopathic organizations. It originates in England to have people say, hey, homeopathy worked for me. It's helping me. So it's real easy. Just go there and just sign their petition. Takes you a few seconds. So you can help homeopathy a bit by doing that. Just to let you know, too, that when you listen to this, it's still probably not too late to sign up for the National Homeopathy Conference that's going to be happening in April in the Providence area in Rhode Island. This yearly conference is really the national joint huge conference for homeopathy, for all the practitioner organizations, but also all lay people, anybody interested in homeopathy, and it's sort of organized by the National Center for Homeopathy. You can find out all about it at nationalcenterforhomeopathy.org. It's a 5-day event, although the main conference itself takes place on Saturday and Sunday. This year it'll be April 12th and 13th. But the whole conference begins on Friday, April 11th, begins with a one-day workshop. You can sign up for these pieces individually. One-day workshop by homeopath Andre Sain, who's a very well-known homeopath. These workshops on Friday, and then there's another workshop on Monday and Tuesday, are really geared for practitioners. Then the main conference kicks off Friday night, and that Friday night event is open to the public. And although there is a reception, I think you have to pay for it if you want to go into the reception. But it's generally open the Friday night. And then Saturday and Sunday is the main conference. Very exciting set of speakers. And something that might be particularly interesting to my listeners is that Saturday is a special one-day separate workshop that you can pay for separately. It's, $100 if you buy it by March 14th. So if you hear about it here, it might be too late. Then it would be $130. A one-day workshop for complete beginners. And there'll be a set of, 5 speakers who will be talking, giving a series of basically 1 hour, 15-minute lectures. The first one is Melanie Grimes. These are all taught by really great homeopaths. The first one's called What is Health? What is Disease? What is to be Cured? The second one talks about the homeopathic interview and what that's like. The third one is about teaching you about building your own homeopathic home remedy kit and how to use it. The fourth is about menopause, homeopathy through the transformation of menopause. And the fifth one is called Curing the Incurable. It'll be a set of amazing case stories of cures of supposedly incurable diseases. Something, of course, I'm familiar with. Anyway, finally, also today, before I move on to today's show, and I do have a lot of material to cover, is to say that the NCH is trying to do a lot to combat this misinformation campaign. There was an article, for example, in Newsweek recently that basically had false information saying there was no evidence that homeopathy worked for anything, and this is, anybody who's listened to my show knows this is false. I devoted 2 or 3 shows just to clinical studies showing that homeopathy does work. So our media person, Peter Gold, did contact Newsweek and has set up conference calls between the science editor there and some scientists he can speak to, and so we are making progress on those things. I think, as I always say, all of you should be supporting the National Center for Homeopathy, and you should join. Just go to nationalcenterforhomeopathy.org to find out all about that. Okay, last thing, all of you know who listen to my show, I always talk about my book, Impossible Cure. That's what this show is based on, and you can find out all about it at impossiblecure.com, where you'll find a page about autism and autism treatment with referral list to practitioners. Also, the annotated archives of this show, I recommend you listen to them. The Cure Stories database, read about other stories of people's experiences and contribute your own. And, of course, how to order Impossible Cure in bulk or as single copies. Also, always feel free to email me at Lansky@ImpossibleCure.com or alansky@autism1.org. And, preview of next month's show, April, in honor of the National Conference. But actually, always during that period is also something called World Homeopathy Awareness Week, which is an international effort. And I'm going to be interviewing Los Angeles homeopath Gabrielle Traub, who is the founder of World Homeopathy Awareness Week. And I know she also treats autistic kids. So we'll talk to Gabrielle about all that. Okay, so let's move on to today's show. And I do have a lot to cover. And the basis of today's show is the doctrine of signatures, but more so even the fact how homeopathy is really focused on symptom patterns. And the content for today's show is Chapter 5 of Impossible Cure. So if you'd like to go back and review that would be helpful too. So yeah, I'm titling today's show Symptom Patterns and the Doctrine of Signatures, which is the Doctrine of Signatures is one of the most mysterious aspects of homeopathy, at least to me. I think it's fascinating. So I hope you find today's show interesting. So what's homeopathy all about? The practice of homeopathy, the study of homeopathy, it's really about symptom patterns. What do I mean by that? Well, I've often said that homeopathy is holistic medicine. It treats the whole body. It's not just like most conventional medicine, treating specific symptoms with things to deal with those symptoms, and you get a different medicine to treat each symptom. Instead, disease, any disease, the whole person is viewed as being in a state of being, and it's that covers their entire being, not just their physical body, but your mental, emotional, behavioral, physical. You as a person are in a whole single state, and it's, you can think of it as a single vibrational state of being. That's you. And part of that state is the vibration of your disease state, which are things about you that shouldn't be there, the things that are symptoms of disease. But all of it is together with you. You're in a single vibrational state of being. And the symptoms that you experience are just manifestations or outward signs of that state of being. So think of a ball of vibration, and the only thing you can really understand about that vibration is the symptoms that are manifested on the outside that you can see or you can experience. Now, similarly, and amazingly enough, each remedy is also a single vibrational state of being. That remedy, that little pill that you take, also incorporates a vibrational state of being. That's a complete state of being with mental, emotional, physical symptoms that it can create. And what I'm going to argue later, and this is what the doctrine of signatures is all about, is that that vibrational state is actually the state of the substance from which that remedy was made. So if you have a little homeopathic remedy made from a flower, that state of being of that remedy is also the state of being of that flower, that physical flower. So, and there's lots of evidence for that, and I'm going to be talking about it today on this show. So as you all know, the foundational principle, the single principle of all of homeopathy is the law of similars. And that states that if you bring together that vibrational state of being of the substance in the remedy, and that vibrational state of being is similar, as similar as possible to your own vibrational state of being or the vibrational state of being of a diseased person, if they're very similar vibrations, then that remedy can cure the disease of that person. So bringing together two very similar vibrational states somehow removes the disease state of the sick person. That is what homeopathy is all about. So, if you think about it, homeopathy is all about patterns. Patterns, discovering the patterns of these various states of being and matching the patterns of a substance or the patterns of a remedy with the patterns of a person. So, how do we discover, and why are these patterns so important? Of course, you know, the vibrational state, we can't measure that. We don't really have the tools yet to measure this vibrational state of being. I mean, if we if we scientifically really knew how to measure all the complex aspects of this vibrational state of being, we could measure it, and then we could compare that to the remedies, then we could select them perhaps automatically. Now, there's people who have these machines that claim to do that, but frankly, I don't really buy into that. So the only thing that homeopaths can do is look at the physical patterns, the physical, mental, emotional patterns that manifest on the outside, that give us clues to what that vibrational state of being is all about. These are the symptoms. So how do we find out about the vibrational state of a remedy? Well, the way we do it is by conducting a proving, and I've talked about this before. These are homeopathy's drug trials. So a remedy is given to a healthy person, and then, you know, several times over the period of a few days, and then over the next week or even months, that person marks down all the things that happened to them, new things that happened to them, new physical symptoms that occur, new mental, emotional symptoms that occur, dreams, behavior, anything they notice that's unusual that has occurred ever since they took that remedy. And that's the pattern of symptoms that remedy is all about. And these drug trials these drug trials are done with placebo controls, etc., but they've been done over the past 200 years by many people, and all these symptoms are collected, and those form the symptom pattern picture of that remedy. And there's amazing consistency between these drug trials. These remedies do produce a consistent symptom pattern that's associated with them, with hundreds, even thousands of symptoms. And, of course, the other part of the picture is discovering the symptom pattern of the patient. And we'll talk about that in a second. So there's various fascinating things about this, about the business of homeopathy, this pattern discovery and this pattern matching that goes on in homeopathy. The first one I want to point out is that provings, these drug trials that are done for homeopathy, and by the way, it's often homeopaths who undergo these trials as part of their training. These provings are the only known systematic study of the human psychosomatic pathology system. Now, we usually use the term psychosomatic disease to talk about disease that's all in the mind, for example. But the truth is, every disease is psychosomatic, and that means every disease has both psychological and somatic or physical aspects to it. No person in any state of disease doesn't have both mental, emotional, and behavioral aspects to their disease pattern. And there's a range of what these disease patterns can be. They're not just random conglomerations of symptoms that are just stuck together. Each pattern has a distinct quality to it, and the range of these possible patterns have been evoked in these provings in the homeopathic drug trials. And actually, one of the more famous American homeopaths, Wittmond, who was also a Jungian psychiatrist, talked about this. He said, psychiatrists have always known that there's often physical and mental symptoms that tend to go together. And, you know, there hasn't ever been a real study of what these are, but there has been. It's these drug provings, the provings of homeopathy. For example, I'll just give you an example. The real common homeopathic remedy, Nux Vomica. And this remedy, like them all, has different types of emotional and physical symptoms. And the nux vomica pattern is like what we view as the type 1 personality type, the really a workaholic type of person, often a man who is emotionally often angry, impatient, works too much, and behaviorally often drinks too much, eats too much rich food, wine, woman, and you know, basically works long all day in the office, and then they have a lot of business worries and cares, and then at night they go home and they drink too much or they have too much sex, and then they can't. Then they have trouble sleeping, and they're nervous and they're irritable. They might wake up early in the morning. They can't sleep because of their business worries. And on the physical plane, they often have digestive problems, ulcers, stuff like that. So we all know what this type of person is. And that is the pattern of symptoms of the nux vomica personality, the person whose state is matched by nux vomica, which is made by this poisonous nut. So something about this poisonous nut is also the state, the vibrational state of the nux vomica person. I was going to talk about another remedy and its symptom pattern that just forms this obvious pattern. That's arnica, the arnica remedy that we know all about. But I'm going to move on because I still have a lot to cover today, and I can see I'm already lagging here. But you can read in Chapter 5 about the whole symptom pattern of arnica that is brought on by a flower. That's amazing that this arnica flower can bring on the symptom pattern of arnica. And I've talked about it before, the state of shock, physical shock, mental shock, and also a lot of symptoms having to do with trauma-like states, blood, hemorrhaging, bloody stools, bruising. Oh, and I did want to say that this arnica state, well, I'll talk a little bit about it. The arnica state has similarities to many autistic children. Look, I'm going to read to you from the mind section of Materia Medica about arnica. There's the fear of being touched, approached, a kind of morose mood, very apathetic, physically restless, says nothing is wrong with him when really there is something wrong with him. Hard to speak, answers very slowly and with effort, feels when he reads things escape his mind, hopeless, indifferent, but also can be very, very suddenly fearful in the night, especially after an accident, frightened, things easily started, sits as if wrapped in thought. Now, if I say all that to you, it does sound a little bit like many autistic kids, doesn't it? But this is the shock state of arnica. Arnica is like the most common remedy that people use. Like, you know, if you have any kind of accident and bruising, shock, anything that's like a traumatic event, arnica is the first thing you take, and it can be work wonders. I've talked about it. I've given it so many times to my mother, who's 92 now. Anytime she falls. And I found over the years, especially when Max was not doing well, when we were beginning on the homeopathic journey, that when I would give him arnica for something else, like, you know, for a dental procedure, I once actually cured him of whooping cough with arnica. It has the symptom of these bloodshot eyes from coughing, and I noticed he had that, and I gave him arnica. But I noticed every time I gave him arnica, his mental state improved too. The autism state improved. That's because arnica is homeopathic, is similar to, somewhat similar to the autistic state. So we think of arnica as an acute remedy, but it also has much broader application because its pattern, its energetic state, is somewhat similar to the autistic state. It's not commonly used in autism cases, but I think it actually has some application. So, So that's one thing that's really interesting about these provings. We find out these psychosomatic symptom patterns that people in the world can experience. And the most amazing thing is that these patterns are found in plants and animals and minerals. Isn't that amazing? Okay. Another interesting and important thing about provings, and very different from conventional medicine, is that these homeopathic drug provings are conducted on well people, on healthy people. This is the opposite of the way drug trials are done in conventional medicine. They're only done on sick people or on animals. But that is completely inappropriate to homeopathy because, first of all, with animals, we can find out nothing about their mental state, which is so critical in homeopathy. And with sick people, the whole point of doing a proving is to find out what new symptoms it causes in a person. With a sick person, if we give a drug to them, a homeopathic drug proving, we can't really find out what it's really doing because the person's already sick and it might cure some things. But how do we know what this thing actually causes? We can't do that if we give it to a sick person. And if we're just trying to see if it cures the sick person, well, as we know, we don't treat symptoms. We have to treat these whole patterns. And it's true that if somebody's in a particular pattern and they get well from a particular remedy, that can provide a lot of clinical information for homeopaths. But for the proving, we really have to do it on healthy people. Now, a third thing that's really interesting is that these patterns of symptoms, they're not just this random conglomeration, as I've said. They always have some kind of meaning. You might call it a golden thread of meaning that runs through them. Like for arnica, it's this shock kind of state. And it can be physical shock, like from trauma, or it can be mental shock. There's some thing like shock that runs through it. Or for nux vomica, it's a thread of irritability. So there's this quality, a quality that has meaning that runs throughout the remedy, throughout the pattern, and every aspect can be related to it. And that's a real important and useful thing about these symptom patterns, because it also helps the homeopath figure out what's the right remedy for you. So let's move on to that part now. The whole business of the homeopath is to figure out what is your symptom pattern, what is your energetic state of being, and what's the closest remedy to that. And it's not so easy. It isn't easy. A person comes in to you and they're this big tableau, they're this big mystery, and you have no idea what their state of being is. Now, in conventional medicine, you go to the doctor, and all they're interested in is these common symptoms. Do you have a headache? Do you have a cough? Here, take this or that for that. In homeopathy, all of that is completely useless information, because every remedy, every pattern will have a headache, will have a cough, will have respiratory problems, will have diarrhea maybe, or constipation. Every remedy has something that pertains to, every part of your body. And, so there might be hundreds of cough remedies, hundreds of thousands maybe of headache remedies. But each one will have a distinctive quality. So that's what the homeopath has to figure out. What is the distinct pattern of you, and what is the distinct pattern of each remedy, and how do we put them together? It's really like trying to find out that most unusual thing about you, the most striking thing about you they have to find out. It's like looking out into a field of flowers and knowing that, that flower right over there, that's this kind of flower, and has to stand out amongst all those other flowers. What is the thing about you? What's the distinct thing about you and your symptom pattern or your child's symptom pattern that makes them stand out? What's unique? That's the thing about their pattern that will point the way to what their real fundamental energy state is about. And there's lots of ways that homeopaths have been trained to sort of find that striking thing. Now, the first thing, the most important thing, is that the most important symptoms are the symptoms that that person views as fundamental to themselves. That's them. And we might call them I symptoms. The things a person will say when they talk about them, they'll use the word I. They'll say, I'm a very shy person. I don't like to be in company. That makes me really clam up. Okay. Or they'll say, even about a physical symptom, when I get nervous, I get all hot and sweaty. Or when in this cold, I feel really hot and sweaty and tired, and I'm listless. But when you talk about other symptoms, you might use the word my. My foot is really hurting me. My temperature is 100 degrees. My stomach is hurting. See, those are my symptoms. And it's like you're talking about something else. That's not you. The most important symptoms are those I symptoms. And what's the most important of all the I symptoms? It's those mental symptoms. Those behavioral symptoms. The mental, emotional, and the very subjective feelings people have about themselves. Those are the most important symptoms because they point to the center of the person, the core of their vibrational state. And that's why you might spend, when you go to the homeopath, a lot of time talking about your whole life and, you know, things that happened in your childhood and, you know, they want to know what the core, what makes up, what's the repeating patterns, what is this person really about them. So those are the most important symptoms that will guide a homeopath to the correct remedy often. But not just those. Even when there's just physical symptoms that the person can give, often that's enough. So how else can we get to these really unique things? Well, another way is to find symptoms, even physical symptoms, that are really unusual, really strange. We call these strange, rare, and peculiar symptoms in homeopathy, SRPs. For example, and a lot of times there'll only be one remedy that has that very strange symptom. You can look them up in these books called the repertories, and they go, whoa, that is the weirdest symptom. But if that person has that symptom, it might point the homeopath right to a remedy. I'll give you an example. There's a remedy called Nux Muscata, which is just made from nutmeg. And nutmeg has this one symptom that is very strange, that their hearing is impaired just before a storm. It's the only remedy with that symptom, hearing impaired before a storm. Very strange, isn't that? Here's another symptom, and that is of the remedy Aurum, which is made from gold. And it's that eye symptoms, and Aurum has a lot of eye problems, eye symptoms. Eye symptoms are ameliorated by moonlight. Now that's really strange, isn't it? By looking at moonlight, the eye problems of an Aurum person are ameliorated. Interesting, isn't it? So those are strange, rare, and peculiar symptoms. If the homeopath hears one of those, they go, whoop, their ears prick up, because that's something to look up and see if they can find that. And by the way, I want you to notice that all the things I'm telling you about, all these important things to find the remedy, are all considered completely irrelevant to a conventional doctor, because they're just trying to treat these common symptoms. It's such an interesting thing that what a homeopath needs to know is in some ways the complete opposite of what a doctor wants to know. They'll just laugh these things off. Another thing, probably the next most important thing that a homeopath needs to know is what we call causation. If there's something, some event that you feel brought on the disease, the situation, it can be the key thing. It can be the key to the case. Maybe your problems all began with a fright, some frightful situation, or a grief situation, or something when you were bitterly disappointed by something, or maybe before a scary event, like maybe you have a kid who just freaks out completely before a test, and gets trembling and all this before a test. Well, there's remedies that are specifically all about stuff like that, performance anxiety, that can narrow things down quite readily. I talk about this in my book, how I had a bout of bronchitis brought on by fright, and the remedy that helped me, aconite, is one of these remedies that's just known for ailments caused by fright. So that's interesting. So the causation can be the key. And now the other things are to take a symptom, a physical symptom even, are things that just elaborate that symptom and make it much more vivid and specific. So, and these aspects of the symptom together can be enough information to find the right remedy. So what are these aspects? One is perhaps the speed at which a problem came on. Did it come on very slowly and gradually, or did it just happen really suddenly? Suddenly you had this symptom. That can be a clue. Another one is the side of the body. And in fact, the exact location, the exact sensation you have. Where is that headache? Where exactly is it in your head? What is the exact sensation? Does it move around in a specific way? When you have other types of qualities, is like if you have excretions of some kind, let's say diarrhea or snot, what is the exact color and the texture of these things? What times do these symptoms occur? Do they happen at specific times? Do they happen at night versus the day? Do they happen in specific situations, behavioral or even like locations? Does some problem happen every time you eat a certain food or put on a certain piece of clothing or a certain person comes over or when you go to the beach or when you're in the mountains? In fact, does your symptoms get better in certain situations? Is it better from some certain food or from certain locations? Anything. All this kind of information that can make a symptom much more interesting and unique will help the homeopath find the remedy. Another thing you can do is to notice if certain symptoms always come together. Like they can be completely different symptoms, you think, but they always happen at the same time. Let's say whenever time you get upset or depressed, you get diarrhea, you know, or anything like that. Or your arthritis happens at the same time as this headache, you know, whatever. Try to put those things together. That can also make things more unique. So I've given you a lot of information about how a homeopath finds this pattern. And, of course, then all these tools, and I've talked about this before, the tools a homeopath use, including computer programs, they put in all this information, they try to figure out what's the most important parts of important symptoms that you've given them, and then they slowly make their way to trying to find a set of remedies that seem pretty close to what you've told them, and then they read about them, and they hone it down. And I mean, homeopaths go to seminars many times a year trying to find tools and tricks to do this symptom pattern matching. That's what their job is all about. But I think now I'm going to move on to this idea of the doctrine of signatures. To me, one of the most fascinating things is the way these patterns are brought on in a consistent fashion by potentized substances, and that there's evidence that the substance embodies the nature of this state of being, so that this plant or this mineral or this animal embodies this complete, consistent state of being that actually has some meaning or pattern to it that actually makes sense. It all goes together. It's not just a random set of symptoms. It's this pattern of meaning, and that this plant or animal or mineral embodies that state of being. And the best evidence that we have that that's true is our provings of animal remedies. because these provings consistently echo the behavior and other aspects of these animals, even in blind provings, even when the provers have no idea what it is this remedy is made from. And they put it in their mouth, a whole bunch of people, and they take it. They all get these consistent symptoms, and then when you look at those symptoms and compare them against what we know or experience about an animal, it's like unbelievable that this is true. So here I'm going to give you an example of this. This is from a blind proving. It's actually a recently done proving of scorpion poison. So, you know, we all kind of have a feeling for what scorpions are all about. These homeopaths who participated in the proving took the scorpion remedy, not knowing it was scorpion, and these are the symptoms they got. Okay, they had this is a very intense remedy. They got heightened feeling of overconfidence. I'm reading this from my book. Contemptuous, defiant, a lack of moral feeling, quarrelsome, unsympathetic, cruel, unfeeling, deceitfulness, the feeling that one is about to be assaulted, and a malicious desire to injure others, suspicious, a lack of control over one's impulses, indifference to pleasure or one's surroundings or to other people's welfare or opinions, anxiety and fear that's better from walking around, aversion to company, wants to be alone, and feels alone, separated from the world. Emotions are easily excited. So what do we get? We get this image of this kind of loner, somebody who doesn't trust anybody, kind of hangs out alone by themselves, and then feels people are going to injure them, and then just strikes out, and without feeling. And it turns out that And scorpions really are like this, okay? They are generally loners. They are so aggressive that they will eat one another. When hunting, they usually let their prey come to them. They basically hide, and then they sense the vibrations of the person, of the victim coming towards them, and then they pounce on them very suddenly. I have a case in my book I'm going to just read you. There was a truck driver who was treated with the scorpion remedy, and he describes his passion for hunting. I'm going to read this little paragraph. Nothing stops me from what I want to do. I spent a lot of my early years alone. I entertained myself. As a child, my father was away at war. We used to play soldiers, and I was better at it than the other kids. I was the only kid on the block with a bow and arrow and a tomahawk. Two brothers, I kicked their butts. As a child, I spent a lot of time with my grandmother. She was part American Indian. I learned about being in tune with nature, about animals. I learned how to manipulate situations. Killing is not a sport. I'm dead serious about it. I know I can catch them if I want to. I know where to go, and I stay there patiently until the buck comes near. I can communicate psychically with the animals. I say to it, I'm going to kill you, and it turns its head because it knew I had it. Notice, too, how this man liked to play as a kid with bows and arrows. You think of the scorpion there, and he was very much into knives and things. After he took this remedy, the hunter became much calmer and happier. His allergies and headaches disappeared. His arthritis was ameliorated. His blood sugar problems, high blood pressure, were lessened considerably. And he actually became less interested in his knives and guns, too. So that's really interesting. Another remedy that we know about, actually there's a whole suite of remedies, many remedies made from animals, and one set of these remedies are made from the milks of various mammals. And in fact, tons of more and more animal milk provings have been done. There's dog's milk. That was the very first one, was dog's milk, and that's been a remedy around for many, probably over 100 years. Cat's milk, dolphin's milk, goat's milk, lion's milk, wolf's milk, monkey's milk, and human milk, which is a real important remedy that has been useful, especially in cases of mental illness. But I'm going to talk a little bit about dog's milk. This was probably the first milk remedies, lac caninum, and it really manifests the symptoms and the situation of a dog. I'll read from my book. This is what Rajan Sankaran, one of our most famous homeopaths in the world, says about it. This remedy has in it the nature of the dog, an animal that has been totally controlled and civilized. So it has to suppress its basic nature. It's dependent on its master for food, so it has to please him. Its survival depends upon keeping its master happy by its performance, its affection. It has to perform, or it won't be wanted any more. But the dog knows that no matter how much it tries to please, it will never be equal to the human. It feels inferior. It knows that it's at the bottom of the hierarchy. The animal side is also malicious. They can be quite aggressive and defensive. Now, the main theme of the remedy is dominance. Who's going to be on top? People who need laconinum can be irritable and ferocious, but if someone's more irritable and ferocious, they give up and they submit. Then they have a conflict within themselves. Do I want to be what I am? They feel they have low self-worth. I'm not good enough. I feel dirty and horrible. And they become contemptuous of themselves. They try hard to please, to be liked, cared for, and accepted, because they feel left out and feel rejected. And because of all this, they can develop malice and hatred, because they hold somebody else responsible for their condition. And as I say in my book, actually, we use the word bitch to put people down, and this says a lot about how we feel about dogs subconsciously, and that's how a person who needs the dog remedy feels. They feel kind of ostracized and put down by other people, and they try to please people, but they just feel like they ultimately can't succeed. And on the physical plane, there's a lot of dog-like symptoms that laconinum has, including feeling better from being outside and drinking cold drinks. There's lots of symptoms that have to do with the throat and the tongue. When we think of a dog, we often think of their mouths and their tongues hanging out. And laconinum had one of its first really significant uses as the curative remedy in a diphtheria epidemic. So there's all kinds of symptoms having to do with swallowing and talking and salivation and drooling and other things that we kind of associate with dogs. Also, because it's a milk remedy, all the milk remedies have a lot to do with the female genitals and menstrual periods and breasts. So that's interesting too. So, if this is true, then, if a remedy lets us know about the fundamental state of an animal, that is amazing. It's like, you know, I remember watching the cartoons about King Arthur and Merlin, and Merlin enables Arthur to be a fish or be a bird or be an animal. That's what these remedies are like. I mean, if you take this remedy, it will teach you something, what it's like to be this animal. That is amazing. And I actually had my own experience of this. I was, unfortunately, I think erroneously given this remedy. I ended up essentially doing a proving of it. It was not the correct remedy for me, but I really experienced the symptoms of this remedy that was made from red-tailed hawk. And let me tell you, it was pretty horrible. It had a couple beneficial effects for me, but in general, it was not the correct remedy, and I really experienced some very odd symptoms I never experienced before. One was is that I felt very depressed. I'd never been that depressed before, and when my homeopath put me back on my previous remedy, it completely antidoted this remedy, the red-tailed hawk, and I, within like hours, I felt completely back to myself again. What a relief. But anyway, on the red-tailed hawk, I was depressed, and the only time I felt okay at all was when I was at home with my family. If I left my home, if I was out with anybody, even friends, I just felt really depressed and very unhappy. I just could not wait to get home to my house and my family. It was very peculiar. So there must be something about the red-tailed hawk, I didn't actually look it up, that is like that, that is very wanting to be at home with their family and doesn't like being out there. Now, you might say, okay, this is true for plant, for animal remedies, but the truth is it's also true for plants and for minerals, too. And I'm going to give you a story that will buttress this. When I was doing my studies, my homie, the teacher, was talking about a recent approving of lava. And this was a blind proving, too. The homeopaths, the people taking it, did not know what this substance was made from, what the remedy was made from. But the minute that this remedy was put on their tongue, many people said they had this sensation of incredible heat, hot lava, you know. And there were other symptoms that were just totally evocative of lava, just amazing. So, and the other thing that we often find, too, is that the symptoms that come out in these provings, they echo mythical and symbolic associations with the substance. Sometimes there are even physical aspects of the substance, like for a plant. If the shape of the leaf is like a heart, they might find that this plant remedy is good for the heart. Very interesting. Now, this was the very most rudimentary and early notion of what the doctrine of signatures was about, which was that, like, if the shape of the plant was like, you know, your kidney, then it was for kidney problems. Well, that's just a very simplistic view of the doctrine of signatures. This is much, what's really going on now in homeopathy is an understanding that this is a much deeper phenomenon. Just to give you an example, the remedy made from gold, aurum, it's called aurum. And symbolically, in mythology, the gold is associated with the sun and also with the king, with royalty. And the king is associated sort of mythologically and symbolically, as is the sun, with the feelings of responsibility, pride, will, a feeling that you would rather die than fail your people and stuff like that. And these are the symptoms of aurum, of the remedy aurum. These people feel very guilty, responsible, very proud, and it's often a remedy for people who are suicidal when they have failure. And also, mythologically, the sun and gold is associated with the heart and with the eyes. And it turns out that aurum has symptoms, many heart symptoms. It's an important remedy in heart ailments and with eye symptoms. We talked about that one symptom, about eye symptoms ameliorated by, interestingly, moonlight, whereas gold is associated with the sun. Interesting, isn't it? So, I just want to conclude now by saying, isn't it amazing? Homeopathy proves that there is meaning in the universe, that we have these symbolic states of being in us, and our diseases have these symbolic states of meaning, and that animals, plants, and minerals echo these states. They have their own distinctive patterns. There's a theme, there's a purpose to the states of being, to these energetic states of being in our universe. And I think that's one of the most profound and exciting things about homeopathy, and I hope you'll agree with me. So that's about it for today. I just want to remind you, too, about three more things. Go to some websites again, impossiblecure.com, nationalcenterforhomeopathy.org, homeopathyworkedforme.org, sign that petition. And finally, there's this new Yahoo group that is going, it's starting to pick up. It's called homeopathy-and-sn, which is homeopathy for special needs. It's basically an autism and homeopathy list. So if you want to, go to the Yahoo groups and join homeopathy-and-sn. So that's it for today. Remember, be well, and there's truly hope with homeopathy.